we almost got through Wednesday night. Two parables that I was assigned. So I want to finish up the second one, which is in Luke 16. We're talking about the rich man and Lazarus. And we're talking about why should we care? And so we almost got through it, but since half the congregation wasn't here, we'll kind of rehash it real quick and then kind of move on. Can I get somebody to read, if they would, 19 through 31 of Luke 16.
There was a certain rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. But there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was laid at his gate, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. So it was that the beggar died, and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. And being in torments in Hades, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off, and Lazarus in his bosom. Then he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things, and likewise Lazarus received evil things. But now he is comforted, and you are tormented. And besides all this, between us and you, there is a great gulf fixed, so that those who would want to pass from here to you cannot, nor can those that from there pass to us. And then he said, I beg you, therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torment. Abraham said to him, they have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. And he said, no, Father Abraham, but if one goes to them from the dead, they will repent. But he said to them, if they do not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rise from the dead.
Thanks, Dwayne. Okay, so quickly we'll go through this, and we're talking here about a Pharisee and one that was justified himself before men. He was what was his reason for sin according to Christ here? Wasn't it that he was rich, and that he got all he could and he kept it for himself? And also that he lived very luxuriously. He definitely showed that he had money. And verse 20 talks about Lazarus, who laid at the rich man's door that he might obtain aid or food. And in 21, it talks about how he was covered with ulcers. Not only was he afflicted with poverty, but he was also afflicted with all these nasty ulcers that were all over his body. They were even oozing and laid open, and none of them seemed to be bandaged of any type. So, because it talks about the dogs being licking his wounds. I think if you look at it here, the circumstances are designed to show how different in this parable the conditions were between Lazarus and the rich man. You know, the rich man was clothed in purple, which was a very expensive color, showed prominence. And then you have Lazarus, who was covered in sores. He lived luxurious, and Lazarus depended on the crumbs that fell from the table, or any type of aid that he could get from people. This description is designed simply to show that the possession of wealth and all the blessings of this life could not exempt him from death and misery in the next life, whereas being wounded and feeble and starving in this life could be, you have the chance of being happy in the next life. Feel free, if there's anything, just speak up. Comments, questions.
One of the things that comes to my mind is that we know that the world is full of lots of people that are poor, and we couldn't possibly minister to all of them. But this guy was located at his front gate. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and so we try to help those that we know about. In James, second chapter says, "For judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy, and he showed no mercy."
Right. No doubt he walked by him every day. Verse 22, the Jews held the opinion that the spirits of the righteous were taken by angels to heaven at their death. You know, angels are ministering spirits sent forth to minister to those that are heirs of salvation, as it says in the verse that the beggar died and was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom, and the rich man was also died and was buried. So in Hebrews 1 and 14, it talks about the ministering spirits. Are they not all ministering spirits sent forth to minister for them who shall be heirs of salvation? And talking about Abraham's bosom, from what I read on this one was it denotes intimacy and friendship. The Jews had no doubt that Abraham was in paradise. And there you have Lazarus is laying there in the bosom of Abraham, being looked upon by this rich man. Matthew 3 and 9, it says, And think not to say within yourselves, we have Abraham to our father, for I say unto you that God is able of these stones to raise up children unto Abraham. So to be a friend was, in their view, the biggest honor of Abraham. Jesus showed them that this poor and afflicted man might be raised to the happiest and highest, while the rich, who prided themselves on this being descendants of Abraham, might be cast away forever. So it's complete flip-flop of what they anticipated. In Luke 23, it talks about hell, how it's afar off. Lazarus was seen afar off. It's a place of torment. Great space between hell and heaven. And the suffering is great. It's represented by torment in a flame. And that there's no escape from it. The word hell here means dark, obscure, and miserable place, far from heaven, where the wicked shall be punished forever. It talks about heaven and hell will be afar from each other. Here's where we kind of left off in 24 last week. And he cried and said, "Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus, that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame." It's a pretty powerful verse. Talks about Father Abraham. Again, we talked about how great honor it was to have him as their father. Have mercy on me means they wanted pity. Did he ask to be rescued from hell? No, he just wanted to, I think he knew that's where he was, and I think he just wanted some pity. And the lost spirits know that their suffering will have no end, and that they will be in a vain to ask to escape from a place of torment. So I think they know. And he wanted Lazarus to come to reduce. It shows how low he was reduced to have this poor, sore-infested beggar to come and help him. And when it said dip the tip of his finger, this was a small favor to ask, and it showed the greatness of his distress when such a small thing would be considered a great relief. I cool my tongue. I think this denotes that the how hot it actually was, the unquenchable thirst, kind of a burning thirst, so that even a little drop of water might be refreshing to him. Kind of an idea to represent the natural effect of great suffering. Any questions or comments or anything so far?
Let's say that this is a very interesting story. You know, whether it's a parable or whether it's something that happened, I'm not sure.
Right.
I think it certainly uses figurative language, because the way I understand it, and I don't think there's anywhere in the Bible that supports it, Abraham would not have the power to do what this man requested.
Right.
And why would Lazarus be in Abraham's bosom? I think it's figurative language.
Right.
He is in a place of safety and waiting heaven, and if you have to say that Abraham would represent anyone, he surely would represent God.
Right.
Instead of Abraham, although in Matthew 8:11, Jesus told the centurion, he says, "I say to you that many will come from east and west and will sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven." So, you know, those were leaders of the Jewish faith that we know were saved, and I think that's a statement by Jesus that, you know, there will be those who are saved,
right,
who will be in the company of
these, right,
Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Right.
And I think this story we're talking about is using Abraham, using the figure of Abraham in the same way.
Right.
Because I just don't see how, you know, we have nothing to support the fact that Abraham would have been able to, you know, go above God,
right.
In order.
Abraham, when we think of Abraham, we think of faith, don't we?
Right.
So I think this kind of indicates a state of faithfulness that he found himself in, and that's very comforting.
Yeah. Any other comments?
Like the Jews had always thought of Abraham being in charge of this great pit, and they thought of that pit as being in the center of the earth. You know, it's all just what they developed in the thinking, but it's recorded, and you know, he just thought of those being in charge of this area. It would seem like, you know, that would have to be referring to God, but they thought of Abraham as being the great father that was in charge of it all.
Right.
And they tied their ancestry.
Yeah, everything was tied to Abraham.
Yeah, they like to think that they were chosen people and all this. Anything really was definite, they were God.
That's probably why Jesus talks about Abraham here. I mean, because it was such a, they could tie it to that.
It seems like even now, though, that in all of this, the rich man never showed any concern at all for Lazarus. He was just wanting to comfort himself and concerned about his family, but you know, there'd be no control over that.
Right. Verse 29, Abraham said unto them, "They have Moses and the prophets, let them hear them." You know, they're wanting to wanted to send somebody that had died and send them back to let everybody else know what was going on so that they could be warned. And 29, it says they had Moses and his writings and the prophets and their writings, and you know, if they're not going to listen to him, they're not going to, you know, they told him what they need to do. Sending another person back from the dead is not going to make them understand or attend to the message.
You know, think for a minute about, you know, the rich man, he's only concerned about his five brothers. Mm-hmm. When you think about in Jesus' time, the Jews had a person who they could go to who had died and had been risen from the dead. Now, and in the real man, Lazarus, we don't know what Lazarus experienced while he was dead, but, you know, he was dead a couple of days. Something was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But what did the Jews try to do? They didn't go talk to him. What were they trying to do to Lazarus? They were trying to kill him. Because why? Well, because he was the proof that Jesus was the Messiah. And, you know, the Jews had Jesus who died and was raised up. There's stories in the Old Testament of people who died and come back alive, and they still didn't believe Jesus.
Right.
And that's why miracles don't exist today anymore. It just, people don't believe miracles.
That's one of the best, that's a very good reason also, or point to use when, if you're talking to someone that does believe in miracles performed by man today. If they didn't believe Jesus Christ, why would they believe me or you if we performed a miracle? He came back from the dead. What else can you do?
There's nothing. What more powerful point, yeah.
You know, if you heal somebody, is that more powerful than raising them after they're already dead and laying there? No.
Yeah. Good point.
I think it must be human nature to ignore warnings or think that they don't apply to us. You know, I mean, but like I've been saying, what more could have been done to tell these people? A few years ago when I went to the west, like Grand Canyon and Yellowstone, you know, there's signs all over about, you know, do not get close to the falls. Do not attempt to hike to the river and back in one day. You know, all
right.
Over, okay? And I still read in the paper, you know, someone died in the falls, and it just lasted the Yellowstone. And
a lot of times it's not what I want to hear, so I'm not going to believe it. So, so what can we learn from this parable? Souls of people do not necessarily, they don't die with their bodies. The soul is conscious after death. But the righteous are taken to a place of happiness, the wicked one to misery. And what wealth does not secure us from death? Wealth does not secure us from death. I think that it should not envy the condition of the rich. And we should strive for a better inheritance than can be possessed in this life. You know, no matter what we have happened to us in this life, there's always, if we do the things that we know we're supposed to do by reading the Bible and studying it, that we will be rewarded. I think that's a big one that we can you know, and that God gives us sufficient warning to prepare us for death. Kind of like we were talking about, it's whether we decide to heed the warnings or not. That's up to us. And it will eventually affect our fate. So
that was the point in this parable that's always helped my attention from a young lad. You talk about that great hope.
Yeah.
You can't get from one side to the other. So when you get past death, physical death. You can't move. You
nothing
can't
else you can do.
Make amends and change anything.
It's interesting that this man, he doesn't try to get out of his situation. I mean, I think he knows, as will everyone, that they're in the place that they want, whether it's in paradise or in torment. And he doesn't say, come get me out of here.
Right.
I mean, that's what we would say if we were there right now. You'd want us, but instead, he asked for two things. One is a little comfort, which is sort of odd because it's not even much comfort. But then the second is he's worried about all of his relatives.
Mm-hmm.
It seems as though that when we die, we are going to understand that we're exactly where we belong. And we won't make excuses for ourselves.
Right. And what's funny is about when it talks about the fire, why does it put it as fire? I think it's because, to me, it puts it that way because that's about as more the most torment you can, to me, that you could go through on this earth. I mean, is be burnt. You know, it really puts into perspective the how bad it's going to be. So.
Who did he want? Who did he ask to be sent to his father's house? It says in verse 27 that you would send him to my father's house and tell him about this and warn him. Well, who's him? Who's that person? I was trying to look back and I haven't.
Is it Lazarus?
Abraham? Or whoever Abraham represents, or is that?
I think it's Lazarus.
Okay, so let's talk about send Lazarus back.
To warn them, yeah.
Okay.
Jesus taught the importance of genuine caring. Luke 14, 13 and 14. But when thou makes a feast, call the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and thou shalt be blessed, for they cannot recompense thee. For thou shalt be recompensed at the resurrection of the just. They may not be able to repay you, but they will be rewarded much later on. You know, God expects us to care for the sick and suffering. Galatians 4 and 14. And my temptation, which was in my flesh, ye despised not, nor rejected, but received me as an angel of God, even as Jesus Christ. His illness was a trial to you. You treated me without contempt. Instead, you welcomed me as if I were an angel of God. When caring for others, we care for our Lord. Matthew 25 and 40. And the king shall answer and say unto them, verily I say unto you, and so much as ye have done it unto one of the least of those, these are my brethren, ye have done it unto me. So the main reason that we care, I think, is out of love. You know, what is the opposite of love? Is it hate? I think part of it's in action, too. If they, you know, the ability to walk by someone in need and not do anything. You know, I think ability to, like the Samaritans, you know, the priest and Levite, they walked right by the person that was hurt. Didn't even give it at least the priest didn't even give it a second thought. You know, the ability to stay quiet when you know the truth. You know, I think love is also meeting the needs of any person at any time.
Michael, I think that in Christ telling the story here of Rich Man Lazarus, Christ makes it fairly clear that, you know, he recognizes the fact that this world isn't fair, that some people are treated poorly and have poor living conditions. Some people are treated very well and live very luxuriously. And there's a great imbalance in the way that people live and the things that they do. But in the end, God himself is the great equalizer when it comes to the end of time. Is that he will balance these things out and the rights will be made, or the wrongs will be made right. Likewise, the other way. He has a way of balancing the scales when the end of time has come. So although this world may not be as nice as we like it, or we may live better than other people on the converse, it will all even out in the end.
Right. Good point. Is there any other comments or anything? Fortunately, we're running out of time. I didn't get quite as far as I wanted to, but...